You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, a tough one last night for Syracuse. 81-75, they fall on the road at Chapel Hill. Tim Leonard and Tyler Aki here with you to break it down on the Locked On Syracuse podcast. If you didn't stay up for the end of this one, it was a late one, a 9 p.m. tip. All your fears of what you were worried about happening in this game basically came true, I'd say. It was kind of sadly tied, just like every Syracuse loss from the past 5-6 years, right?
I will say this. If there's a way to go out, that was a way to go out. I mean, Syracuse, they did play a heck of a game. And we're probably going to be a little more critical during this show. But overall, I think this was a positive game for the Orange. They hung tough. Obviously, the reboundings are a major, major concern. But there was a lot of good that came out of this game, especially on the offensive side of things. Quincy Guerrier played probably the best game he's played as a member of the Orange in this one. Buddy Boeheim played the best half of basketball we've seen him play. Now, he also probably played the worst half of basketball we've seen him play. But I'm overall encouraged by what I saw in this game. I know they lost by six, but there was a lot of resilient stretches during this game for the Orange.
I'll say this. I was overall encouraged for most of it because they kept battling back, like you said. And then when Jim Boeheim opened his mouth in the press conference and gave us some thoughts on Barama Sidibe and Frank Anselm and the center situation, I kind of ended the night very discouraged overall. But we'll get into
Boeheim's
comments.
Yeah, but when have you
comments.
Been encouraged by the center position over the last, five, 7 years? So it's kind of what I've seen from the last couple of teams now, where you're gonna lack a big man, you're gonna probably get bullied by teams like North Carolina, and that's just kind of the way she goes.
Right, and in a vacuum, this game's encouraging. It's UNC, it's on the road. I don't care what they are. They never match up well against Syracuse, and they hung with them, and they had a chance to win the game, and they showed a lot of signs really on both ends of the floor. Like, there was a stretch where UNC looked pretty lost on offense, and it felt like the Michigan State Sweet 16 game where they were just chucking threes for a while, or maybe it was round two against Michigan State, but whatever. In a vacuum, it's positive. The part that I think frustrates me is it just feels like kind of another game where you're like, yeah, we could have won, but we didn't have size, and it gets old, right? Seeing this team kind of fall victim to this over and over.
No doubt. And this was actually a really fun game. I mean, I'm thinking of from a regular season standpoint, over the past 5 or so years, this is probably one of the more fun games I've watched out of the Syracuse team. It was high tempo, back and forth, and sure, the rebounds were excruciating, but Syracuse, quite frankly, shot the ball pretty well. They actually outshot UNC in this game 47% to 40%, but the differential in the game comes, obviously, not just at the free throw line, but also with the second chance points. You look at UNC, they got 24 second chance points. Syracuse only had 4. So that kind of tells you the story of the game in this one, because UNC was just getting all those offensive rebounds. They were gobbling them up, and when you're creating those second opportunities, like Carolina was forcing in this game, you're gonna win a lot of games when you have 24 second chance points.
24 offensive rebounds for UNC. They win the overall rebounding battle 48-31. In the prop shop, we set it at 10.5 as the over-under positive margin for UNC. If Syracuse could keep it in single digits, I felt pretty good about the game. And I think I even took the under thinking that maybe they could scrap together something sort of like how they handled Georgetown. But in reality, Georgetown just didn't really utilize their bigs. UNC, that was never going to be the case because they have too many of them, and they know it works against Syracuse.
And they're their best players, too.
Yeah, and honestly, like, UNC didn't even really, I mean, they played fine. It's just their margin of error for them is so much bigger because you get all those second chance opportunities. In the way they won the game, it gets to 71-70 after Griffin hits a nice, tough jump shot. Griffin had a cold night, but that was a big shot he hit to cut the deficit to 1, right around 1:40 left in the game. And UNC from there sort of just won the next couple minutes by getting offensive rebounds. It was Baycott who got an offensive board, got fouled, hit some free throws, and then a weird, like, it looked like maybe it was a shot from, I think, Leaky Black that ended up as a perfect pass that went to Baycott, and he got kind of an and one, if I'm not mistaken. So it wasn't like UNC hit some clutch shots. It's just their size won out and their talent won out in the end.
And the thing that was most frustrating to me with the rebounding, listen, we knew Syracuse was probably going to lose the battle on the boards in this game. And it obviously played out 48-31, like we said. But the frustrating thing to me, especially with the offensive rebounds, is you knew Garrison Brooks, Armando Baycott, Dayron Sharp, all those guys were going to get theirs inside, right? You were going to lose a number of things close to the rim. But when that ball kicks long, when that ball goes back iron and kicks all the way back out to the three-point line, that's where you get frustrated if you're a Syracuse fan, when UNC is scooping those rebounds up. Those are the ones that you should be able to get time and time again. And I'm not going to say it's an effort thing necessarily, because sometimes it's just wrong place, wrong time, but you got to be able to corral most of those rebounds. And that, I think, is where this game went wrong, because I can remember probably 5 to 7 long offensive rebounds, including some off free throws. Like, there was that one at the very end of the game where you could have had the ball down 3 and a chance to tie, but you let off an offensive rebound off a missed free throw. Those are the ones that really, really peeve you if you're a Syracuse fan, because that should be the easy ones to corral, and those are the ones that UNC definitely should have no chance at getting.
Yeah, maybe the most glaring stat of the entire game, our center, our starting center, Marek Dolezal, who played 34 minutes, he did miss some time in the first half when he got in some early concerning foul trouble, but Jesse Edwards got some spot minutes, looked fine. Boeheim kind of criticized him afterwards, but Dolezal, in the entire game, Ty, 1 rebound from our center. In a game where there
were
plenty of rebounds.
Not to mention 3 shots, either.
Yeah, and look, let's just call it like it was. I was disappointed in Dolezal last night. I know that that's a god-awful matchup for him. I get that his size is not meant to go up against Armando Baycott, Dayron Sharp, Walker Kessler, Garrison Brooks. I totally get that. But when the game was going down the stretch and he passed that one to Griffin, he had a wide open layup there. Like, he's got to be more aggressive on offense.
And Jordan Cornette was talking about it. And I love listening to Jordan Cornette on these games because he is so spot on with his analysis. I think he does the best job out of anyone that I've heard call a Syracuse game. He called it right out. I mean, Dolezal had that ball. He had a one-on-one matchup, but he, I believe, was the bigger guy in the matchup. I think he had a smaller guy switch onto him because of the rotations defensively. And even if he didn't, go up, take the contact, and you can probably finish that one because your momentum is heading into the guy. He's not going to get called for a charge because his feet were within the cylinder. And that was something to me that there were a couple of those where Dolezal was just too unselfish. You're a senior, and I know Boeheim said to him after the game, he pulled him aside right away and said, hey, you need to be less unselfish. I get that.
Yeah, he may have used some expletives too, probably.
Yeah, I mean,
if it was that friendly.
Right, exactly. As Boeheim is apt to do. But, I mean, he did it a couple times. And Dolezal has to look to score because this team is amazing when you've got a guy like Dolezal who can get you 10 points and then couple that with like 7 rebounds and maybe 4 or 5 assists. When he can diversify the box score for you, that's when he's at his best. And if he's going to play scared against UNC when you're a senior, that can't happen. That cannot happen. And that's kind of what we saw in this game. I know he got his tooth knocked out last game, but to me, the Marek Dolezal I know bounces back. I mean, what was the quote he had after getting trucked by Zion against Duke 2 years ago? It was, I wish I did that 4 more times so he'd be out of the game. And this is a guy who comes in and largely played a scared game. And it cost Syracuse, especially down the stretch.
All right, quick break, guys, to tell you about betonline.ag, which is an up-and-coming new sports book. If you're into sports gambling, if you're trying to get back into it, if you're thinking about getting into it, this is the place for you. You can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use our promo code, LOCKEDON, which gets you a 50% welcome bonus. Again, that promo code is locked on. It's all one word. And when you use that with your free account, say you deposit $100, you'll get $50 of free play. $200, you get $100 of free play. Whatever it is, a 50% welcome bonus tacked on. That's a great way to maybe spend some additional money on the NFL playoff games coming up this weekend, college basketball this weekend, whatever you want to bet on. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit at betonline.ag. So we always refer to KenPom stats, and we refer to the KenPom possessions used stat a lot. And to clarify what that means, it basically is at the end of the possession, who kind of touched the ball last. So if it's a turnover, then you get usage points because, you know, you were handling the ball when you turned it over. If it's a jump shot from Alan Griffin, boom, there goes his usage points. They go up, right? And when you look at the numbers from Dolezal, 8% of possessions used in this game on KenPom. To put it in perspective, every other starter, I'll just run down the list. Buddy, 23%. Quincy, 26% in this game. Griffin led the team 30%. Gerard, 18%. Kadari, 10%. Braswell off the bench, 18%. In other words, he should be 20% each game, I'd say. And Matthew Gutierrez tweeted out before the game the season stats on KenPom, and he was the lowest of all the starters. It wasn't a huge difference, but you looked at the numbers and you're like, why is Dolezal the lowest? He should be the guy that is handling the ball a lot in our offense, and not just, he does handle the ball more than 8%, but he doesn't take the shots. That's what that stat shows you. He's not finishing the plays. He's not holding on to the ball. He's being just a little too unselfish. He only attempts 3 shots in this game. I think he only attempted 3 the game before, is what Jim was saying against Georgetown. We just need more from him, and we know it's in there, and we know he's a great foul shooter, too, when he gets to the line. This year, he's been shooting free throws great, so
oh, yeah,
aggressive.
Remember, he used to be a liability, an absolute liability at the stripe, and I think that's been one of the big revelations for the Syracuse team is that their free throw shooting has gotten way, way better. They're 20th in the country right now, hovering around 80%. So that's one of the things. I think you have to tip the cap. If there's one place this team has gotten better over the course of the past 3-4 years, it is at the stripe. But getting back to your point with Dolezal, so his usage so far this season is at 16.5%, which is honestly, for a center who does a lot in facilitating, I'm all right with 16.5%. I know you probably like it a little more around 20.
I'd like to see it higher, yeah.
But I don't necessarily need to see him, especially with the shooters that this team has, like Buddy, like Joe, like Griffin, and the way that Gary has played. I don't necessarily need to see him at 20, but I do need to see him at 16, especially in games like this, where occasionally you did have some advantages down low. And the lack of rebounds, the lack of prowess around the rim, too. I mean, it is inexcusable for a senior on this team to be taking 3 shots. Absolutely inexcusable when you're playing 34 minutes out there. I thought he gave some productive minutes at times, but there's so much more he could have done in this game.
So Carter Chase tweeted at us, and we love when people tweet at us during the games. We'll shout you out if you have a good comment, point, whatever. If you're actively tweeting at us, that only increases your chances of getting on the show here. Carter Chase said, Dolezal was exposed. He was useless. Man's game, wreck. I wouldn't go that far, but I get the sentiment. Like, I totally agree
right.
That this was a disappointing performance.
There's two spectrums to this. Obviously, I think our friend Carter Chase is on one extreme, and anyone who isn't criticizing Marek is on another extreme for this game. I think you do have to meet it somewhere in the middle because, I mean, the fact that he got to these certain spots on the floor shows that he can obviously hang with a team like UNC. We've seen him hang with teams like Duke, Carolina, Florida State, Virginia in the past. I don't think he got exposed per se in this game. I think he just played tentative, and he played a little scared, and that's not the Marek I know. I know the Marek that's going to get his tooth popped out. I know the Marek that's going to step in front of a freight train in Zion Williamson and take a charge and make a big play for this team. I know a fearless Marek. This was a scared Marek in this game. That can't happen the rest of the season in some of these big games because this could have been a huge pivotal win for this season. This could have been a banner win in the early portions. All the talk of Syracuse can't beat anyone. I don't care what you say about UNC. Syracuse was playing at a disadvantage in this game because of the size factor. No doubt.
No doubt,
in my mind. And this would have been a big win for confidence. And this would have been a big win on your resume when you get to March.
That's the really frustrating thing is I kind of feel like they weirdly outplayed North Carolina. It's just UNC went in. Okay, so
here's how I saw it. You know how you hear people say, players, coaches, all that stuff. We go out and we try to win the four-minute segments, right? Of course, the media timeouts, the under 16, under 12, under 8, under 4. We try to go out there and win the four-minute segment that we're out there on the floor. These were teams that were trading four-minute segments. You'd see Syracuse go on a 13-0 run, then UNC would counterpunch with a 10-0 run. Then Syracuse would counter with a 9-0 run. Then here comes UNC with an 8-2 run. This was a game of runs. And
yeah.
If you were getting in a game of runs, I didn't think Syracuse was going to be well-suited for it. But they clearly showed that they could. And they played a pretty good game when it came down to, oh, we're getting into some pace. Oh, we're down 10. I was actually pretty proud of the way this team fought it from a resiliency standpoint, because I thought when this team got down 10, all right, that's going to balloon to 14. You're going to see a couple offensive rebounds here. But Syracuse did make the necessary adjustments in those timeouts, and they put together some counterpunches, and I didn't think we were going to see that out of this team.
No, I actually, like you said, positive performance from the team in a vacuum, just frustrating that it was, again, the same way that they lost. The other thing of note that's sort of amazing that they hung in the game is they kind of did play to UNC's strength of up-tempo, which is also Syracuse's strength. They like to play up-tempo, too. But most analytical nerds will tell you that the reason why UNC is successful is because they always have talent, and if you create more possessions than a normal game, you're just like decreasing the variance. If you limit possessions, that helps the under-talented team because maybe they can hang around longer, and it's almost like you're playing less minutes overall. But when you play more possessions, talent usually wins out, and that's kind of what happened here. That's why I say that Syracuse kind of outplayed them, because I mean, they got 50% of their misses, so they're getting all those extra opportunities, and the Orange did as much as they could. They fought back after kind of giving them these little holes and giving themselves these little holes, and they got to within a point where, I mean, at one point I did think they were going to win the game when there was 3 minutes left or so.
Oh, yeah, there were plenty of points. I felt that way, too. And I look at the rebounding stuff here, and my favorite stat of the night was this. Obviously, UNC smashes them on the boards 48-31. But UNC's offense almost out-rebounded UNC's defense. 24 right. offensive rebounds to 24 defensive rebounds. I don't think I've ever seen that in a game before. I really don't. And if you told me, oh, Garrison Brooks is going to get a double-double, and also Armando Bacot's going to get a double-double, if you told me that, I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, checkmark, UNC wins the game. Because we have seen UNC have a massive rebounding advantage against some teams and still play close games, like one-point games. And I think this was a very close game. I know UNC covered the spread, but this was a very, very close game. And if you told me that those two guys were getting double-doubles and a couple other guys were going to contribute on the glass too, I would have said, okay, but what was the final score? Just because UNC is rebounding well doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to win the basketball game. But if you told me 24 offensive rebounds and Syracuse only got 21 defensive rebounds, that's where we have a problem. That's where I know, yep, UNC is going to win that game. And guess what? You still only lost by 6. You were still very much in this game at the end.
Yeah, it's just a shame because this was very winnable, and it's not the typical UNC. Like, it is typical in the rebounding sense, but UNC really doesn't look like UNC normally does. And that's a chance where if you can't beat them in that one, I know they beat them last year, so maybe I shouldn't be complaining too much, and they crushed them last year. It's just, it felt like a game that, okay, if you really want to separate yourselves from the recent Syracuse teams, like, at this point, I'm just sort of expecting another bubble season, unfortunately.
And I saw, Lenardi's Bracketology has Syracuse as literally the first team out.
Classic. He probably does that on purpose, but still, I think that's...
Well, that's his January fun. If you're Joe Lenardi, you can't actually predict this thing on January 13th, so you know what? Let's have a little fun with it. I don't blame him.
Yeah, I had some friends text me after the game, Bubble Boeheim, like people that don't follow Syracuse, but they're ACC fans or UNC fans, whatever. And it just stinks that that's become the talking point to the newer generation, maybe. Yeah. But all right, let's get
into
you're
going to get. I'm going to say this. You're going to get UNC one more time this season. Last game of the regular season. You'd imagine Sidibe's back for that, right? Hopefully he's back for that.
So do you want to talk about that?
I don't hate Syracuse's chances. You could beat them at home if you correct one or two things. This is a game that came down to one or two possessions.
Real quick, gotta tell you about the best place on the internet to shop for car parts. That, of course, is rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's almost impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. So why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX, and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at your home and also in your pocket. And one reason to repair and maintain your car is to save money. And that's the best thing about rockauto.com is that you could choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the exact same auto parts that you're going to get at a chain store or new car dealership. And not only that, but chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. So rockauto.com's prices, though, they're the same for everyone, and they're always reliably low. And one of the best parts about rockauto.com is it's a family business that's been serving auto part customers online for 20 years. It's the consistency that makes them the best. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts for hundreds of manufacturers, and be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Again, when you go to rockauto.com to fix up your car or truck, write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Kadari plays, I think, 16 minutes, 26 for Joe. Obviously, a lot of the commentary, as it is every time Syracuse underperforms, doesn't win, whatever, on Twitter, is where are the Kadari minutes? Why not more Kadari? Kadari, Kadari, Kadari. I get it. I do think he could play a little bit more each game just because of what he's giving you on the defensive end. He makes that strip and score to make it a 67-66 UNC lead with like 4 minutes left. That was a huge play that really no other player on Syracuse's team can give to you. I totally understand the value of Kadari. I just, when people get to the extreme of criticizing Boeheim to the point of, oh God, here we go, it's another guy that's going to transfer, that's where I lose you, because the guy is still averaging over 20 minutes a game as a freshman. And to go back, I looked at our prop shop preseason picks, so basically our season-long predictions, We set his over-under in minutes at like 10.5. Like, he's still exceeding minutes that he probably even personally thought. Now, some people get it stuck up in their head that, oh, Boeheim called him Johnny Flynn, Michael Carter-Williams before the season, which he's got to just probably stop doing that in general. He's kind of bringing it on himself a little bit.
Right.
But then they see that and they're like, why isn't he playing 40 minutes a game? Or why isn't he playing the entire game? The bottom line is this. You still need Joe's offense. Kadari is never going to give you 15 points in an ACC game at this stage.
No, I really don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, as much as Kadari has been poised, he's been really good for a freshman. He's still a freshman, and he's still learning how to figure out things offensively. And teams have adjusted to guarding him.
He's still getting tired in these games.
Yes, another great point.
What was the last game? He's on a bike. Like, you shouldn't be on a bike in a game to keep yourself in condition. And let's say this, too. I mean, just look at the minutes. Look at how the minutes played out. Joe played 26 minutes in this game. Kadari played 16. Okay? Like, I think that's about as fair of a split as you can be giving between these two guys. It adds up to 42 right there. To me, I mean, Joe did some positive things in this game. He hit some big shots for you. He had 3 assists. And guess what? He only played 26 minutes. And I'll tell you this too. Listen, I don't love the plus minus stat. Joe was minus 2 in this game. In a 6-point game, he was minus 2. And he didn't do a ton with Kadari was minus 6. So the plus minus right there shows you that Joe was actually slightly better in this game. But Joe does some things for you facilitating. He stretches out the floor. When Kadari's in there, you see the defense is really pack it in. And they make life tough inside, and they can kind of double down on some of these other guys who are going to be shooting the basketball, because Kadari is no offensive threat. His only bucket in this game was, like you said, the strip and score. He was on a transition fast break layup. He wasn't going to miss that one. So if you're going to be a nothing on offense in a game, listen, this game was going to be one on offense, okay? It was going to be one rebounding and on offense. You had to keep pace with UNC by shooting the basketball. And Boeheim even said it after the game, and I largely agree with him. He said we had to play almost perfect on offense to win this game. And guess what? I agree with that. And guess what? You kind of did. You played about as good of a game
offensively.
That's
what I'm saying. They overplayed him.
Yeah, they really did. So you needed Joe out there over Kadari at a lot of these stretches, and I am not upset at all with how the minutes shook out for those two.
I'm with you, and I know a lot of people will be coming at us for that. We did get one good take on kind of the pro Kadari camp. Max Spoler tweeted at us. He's at Spo Dangles, I'm going to assume. It's S-P-O-D-A-N-G. Maybe it's S-Pod Angles, but I'm going to say he's playing on his last name. So Spo Dangles 1 is his Twitter name. He said, Buddy Allen Quincy are having to come get the ball from Joe way up the court, ruining any chance at a fluid half-court offense. KR is in Kadari Richmond is still young, but you can already see his poise and how much better he handles the ball, the on-ball pressure from big teams. His length also causes turnovers on D. All true. I think Kadari's look great. I think Kadari's going to be a great player.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
He's still a freshman guard, though. Go back and look.
That doesn't
at the
play
historical...
offense.
Yeah, that and does he, not he's play not offense. Giving you anything, really. I know he's a good ball handler, but he still is giving you some turnovers. Like the Rutgers game, if he was Joe Girard, or if he was wearing a mask, and that's how he finished, if Joe Girard was in Kadari's body, and that's how the Rutgers game finished, we'd be out here throwing oranges at Joe Girard. Like, he did not show poise in that close game against Rutgers. So let's not completely get blinded by Kadari. I do feel like fans are just looking for that thing that gets him out of this bubble, mediocrity bubble that they're in. Like, this whole just, it feels like we're in this never-ending cycle of mediocrity right now, right?
No doubt.
And a lot of fans are just like, Kadari reminds me of those times before that. I'm seeing flashes of it, and we don't totally know what Kadari is yet. So a lot of people are like, that's it. That's what we need to get us out. And that's what they're telling their friends that don't follow Syracuse. Like, no, we have another one of those guys, and we've gotten the talent that we used to get in this guy, but he's still a freshman. And like, historically, freshman guards across all college basketball don't play a lot of minutes. It's tough to be a freshman guard. Why has UNC struggled the last 3 years? Because they've gone predominantly to a freshman point guard. Now, Kobe White was tremendous. You got lucky with him. Cole Anthony was last year, and he was basically hurt, so you kind of have to scratch that. But then they had to go to other freshmen. And why they struggled this year, Caleb Love, I think UNC and Roy Williams' tenure has played five freshman point guards, predominantly starting. Caleb Love is one of them. There's a reason why UNC gets tons of talent every year and they don't go to a freshman point guard that often. I'm not saying Kadari's bad. I'm not saying Kadari, like, I could go for a little bit more minutes, but I don't really have any problems with this game because Kadari basically closed the game at point guard as well.
Yeah, no, I was going to bring that up. For all the members of the Kadari Hive, he played 16 minutes, and guess what? He played pretty much the entire final minute of this game, even when Syracuse needed offense over Joe Girard. So he played in critical points, and guess what? The offense kind of fell flat in that final 45 seconds when you needed it most. So I get that you want to lock down for defense, but at that point in the game, you just needed people out there defensively to foul for you. So it was a little, I was a little perplexed by that, and I thought it was very telling that we did not see Girard out there, especially when you needed a three.
Yeah. Another Twitter comment here from Rex Toothburner, who is at Syracuse_fan.
Great account.
Yeah, changed his name there. He had a good response here. Starting center out against best front court in ACC, tough pill to swallow. I don't think the recruiting violations get talked about enough. I would agree with him there. I also don't think Hop gets talked about enough, and I think he said that in a separate tweet, but I'll continue. Mm-hmm. Massive difference since
Yeah, this was an indictment on recruiting, and you can point to violations or whatever, but this was an indictment for validity or not, this was an indictment on recruiting in this game that you have not developed a second big, or there is not another one in the pipeline that is ready to play in some of these games.
Right. To Marek Toothburner, I'll get back to your rest of your tweet in a second, but this just, I want to get this in there. You just made me think of it. I'll criticize Boeheim all day for the recruiting. And it does annoy me when he gets on there postgame and he's like, yeah, John Bull's just too small, or he's just not ready. And it's like, okay, well
why not?
Yeah, can we freaking get him ready, coach? They've been with the program a while. I like, can we get a guy that is ready when he comes to Syracuse like we used to?
Listen, we're not asking for a guy to go out there and give you 30 minutes. We're asking for a guy to give you, what, in some cases, go out there and give me four hard fouls, five hard fouls over the course of 10 minutes. Like, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Syracuse wasn't in foul trouble for this game, really.
So, I'll criticize Boeheim for that. I really can't get into criticizing him too much for minutes played, though, and the rotation. Because, honestly, sometimes I think he's done a fairly good job in a decently tough situation this year. And also, he just gets to see these guys in practice all the time. And he's been coaching for 45 years. So, like, as much as we want to attack him, I do think the fan base is just a little too hard on the guy sometimes. He's a Hall of Famer.
And I'll say this. Listen, the minutes were fine in this game, in my opinion. And sure, he's probably right. Jesse, John Bull, they're probably not ready. But the problem is that they're not ready.
Right.
And that comes down to off the court, how you're preparing these guys, how you're developing these guys. That's the problem. The problem isn't that the problem is that they're not ready. But if they're not in these games, all right, they're not ready. But they should be ready.
When you have to say we have to play perfect on offense to have a chance against a team that's really not even that good, like, I know UNC historically is good, but when you have to say that after the game, that's a recruiting problem. That's a talent problem. You wouldn't have had to say that before Mike Hopkins left, before the violations, and when that first year in the ACC when they beat UNC, the last time they beat them before this COVID game in March this past year, then you wouldn't have said. But let me finish up at Syracuse underscore fans tweet here. He said, massive difference since the teams of the early 2010s, like we're talking about. JG3 confirmed sophomore slump. Buddy certified baller. And then a funny comment here at the end. Can Carduso play on the men's team, who is, of course, one of the bigs of the women's team? I don't know if I would say, but I mean, Buddy.
Can I say, I want to talk about Buddy. Yeah. Buddy was fantastic in that first half. 4 of 7 from deep, 18 points, had a couple assists sprinkled in there too, a couple steals, didn't turn the ball over once. He was great. Best half of basketball I've seen him play. Second half, locked up. Didn't do a thing. 0 for 3.
Leaky Black shut him down.
Yeah, 0 for 3, 3 turnovers, 3 fouls. He was in his head a little bit, but I get that he had a different defensive assignment in that second half. But you should have been using him to create opportunities for others. And to a degree, they did. I thought Alan Griffin got sprung free a couple times. Even Joe, he hit both of his threes in the second half. And Guerrier was phenomenal until he fouled out. But there needed to be something. You could have run some pick and roll action with Buddy and Dolezal to get something going there. And it was just, he played scared in the second half. And we've been calling for this all the time, right? We need to see the game where Buddy Boeheim goes out there and shows he can be an alpha, because when he was asked to be the number one option a couple of years ago, he folded. He folded a number of times when Elijah Hughes went out. And I thought this was going to be the game. In the first half, it looked like this was going to be the game. And in the second half, comes out flat. There was nothing. Absolutely nothing from him in the second half. And it was disappointing to see.
It was a bummer that it came right at the end of the first half, his little heat check moment, because then he went into the locker room and it wasn't like we ever got to really see the true heat check. Like, we didn't get to see him fizzle out his run, which was kind of a bummer.
Shooters need to stay on the floor. And that little 15 minute pause can get to you.
Right. Okay. Well, let's stop it here. We'll have comments.
Wait, we have to make Marama. One. Again, we never talk about this guy ever. Quincy Guerrier.
Quincy. Yeah, I mean, he fouled out quickly. I'll say that. But
that was problematic, because you and I were texting. There was a point 5 minutes left in the second half, 5 minutes left in the game, where he is taking fouls because he's like, I'm not going to foul out of this game. This is my second foul. 5 minutes left.
He held his hand up.
He held his hand up.
Yeah, that's on me.
Yep, that's me. Yep. Mm-hmm. Put that on my tab.
And then he fouls out too.
And then he fouls out. And it proves to be critical. But overall, I mean, I thought Quincy was fantastic in this game. He had 23 points and 11 rebounds. And the 5 blocks, he was a menace inside. I was uber impressed by Quincy. He has shown that he can hold his own. My one little nitpick qualm, took a few too many threes for my liking in this game.
Yeah.
One for six. Tremendous. He's not a three-point shooter.
He's definitely gone after next year at this point, I would say. All right.
He's trending that way.
Yeah, let's stop it here. I know we have tons of comments on Bauma, but that's why we do this podcast every day. We will talk about that tomorrow, what Jim Boeheim said post-game. We'll get into that. Obviously, it was a little bit concerning. I think that was the general takeaway, but we'll talk about the center position going forward, and then Friday we will have a Pitt preview for you, so that'll kind of round out the week here on the Locked On Syracuse podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.